and welcome to C3 Church, Bridgman Downs. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
I love beyond. I love the concept. A church that does not evangelize will fossilize. And so it's so vital. I want to relate a story from John's Gospel. If you have your Bible, you can find that. It's out of the New King James. I'm going to read just one verse, but I'll relate the story. The story is rather lengthy. If you've been in the church any length of time or in Christianity, I won't take anything for granted, but it's a common story in the Bible. And just give you a quick synopsis of what takes place. Jesus gets up early with his disciples, and he's going to journey to Galilee. And he said, and I'll come back to this particular verse, it said, but he needed to go through Samaria. He had been walking approximately 6 hours, and he was hungry. The disciples spun off, went into a neighboring town to purchase food. In the midst of it, he sat down on a well. He was thirsty. A Samaritan woman came, and he began a conversation with her. The story is fascinating because he reveals himself at that moment as living water. That doesn't mean a lot to us in Western culture because water, of course, water's a little scarce around here right now. But apart from that, water is something that most of us take for granted. We can turn on a faucet. We can turn on a hose. It's just there. And we have clean water, good water. However, in that particular period of time, I was in Berlin not too long ago, and they have the giant museum. And the museum is amazing, and we spent hours in it. But in there, there was a big stone, like a cistern, a thing where they put water. And I was fascinated because, you know, they have those little numbers, and you have headsets so they can describe what that meant in that particular time. And it was from Mesopotamia. And that during that time period, which is this time period, when you mentioned water, they called water living. They used the term. And water had the ability, they said, to cure diseases and to remove evil and cast out demons. So when Jesus revealed himself as living water, in that context, what he was saying to her is, I have the ability to bring life, to bring freedom, to remove evil and cast out demons. I contain that ability. It communicated to her in such a dynamic way. This woman literally became a flaming evangelist from that point on. But the story I want to come back to is directly ties into why we're here and the theme of this month, which is absolutely so vital because it's more than the theme of this month. It's the theme of this church. And what I love is verse 4. And I kept on hearing it echoing and echoing and echoing on the inside of my mind all week long. Well, I want you to look at verse 4 because in verse 4 it said, and he needed. And he needed. But he needed to go through Samaria. I want you to think about it. Just let that percolate. But he needed. But he needed. But he needed. But he needed. It didn't say, but he liked, or he thought about it, or it was a good idea. It said, but he needed. There are needs in a person's life. We all have physical needs, powerful, basic needs. We all have the need of air to breathe. Without it, you die. We all have the need of water to drink. Without it, after a while, you die. We all have the need of food to create substance or energy and to replenish us physically. We have emotional needs, basic emotional needs that are true to every human being. We need love. We need forgiveness. We need acceptance. These are basic human needs. But I'm not talking about physical needs. I'm not referring this morning to emotional needs. The church has a need. And it's so intrinsic, it's so strong, it's so basic that it is more powerful than the physical need for oxygen, the physical need for food, the physical need for water. It's stronger than the emotional need for love, forgiveness, and acceptance. And when the church violates in any way this need, it begins to die. It will always grow weak. It'll always cocoon itself. It'll always, nothing from the outside has ever been able to destroy or even come close to putting a dent in the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's only from the inside that we destroy ourselves, that we weaken ourselves, because we misplace this need. It is said, and I'm not sure, I tried to find this a long time ago, so don't quote me on it, but it is said that the only way the army of Genghis Khan was defeated, he had the most, you know, he's from Mongolia. There was the 13 tribes of Mongolia 700 years ago. Genghis Khan was the only guy that united all 13 tribes of Mongolia and made him into the most fighting, fierce army of his day. In fact, his army was so feared that most armies surrendered before the battle ever began. And it is reported, it might be fictitious or not, but it's a great story. It's reported that the only way they ended up defeating the armies of Genghis Khan was they had to change their appetite. And what I mean by that is they had an appetite to do. They had an appetite to conquer. They had an appetite to go. And because that appetite was so strong within them, they were feared. But one day they said the armies of Genghis Khan were marching on China, and the Chinese emperor reversed their appetite. It took months. But the report was given to the villages and towns and communities, when the feared armies of Genghis Khan come, don't fight them. Provide no opposition to them. In fact, celebrate them. Give them whatever they want, food, homes, clothing, everything they want. So they did. And after several weeks of the armies eating whatever they wanted, enjoying whatever they wanted, they reversed the appetite of that strong, feared army from an appetite to do to an appetite to want. And when they reversed the appetite, they were able to defeat the feared armies of... Are you with me so far? When the church was born in the very heat of something so incredible, and the mandate was given to the church to go into all the world, the church was formed with one appetite, an appetite to go. The first words Jesus ever spoke were come and see. The last words he ever spoke were go and tell. It was an insatiable appetite to affect a world, to save a world, to change a world, to bring the miracle power of God to a generation, to see the intimate return of the Lord Jesus Christ. Nothing could stop it. Persecution came. It only grew. Everywhere they went, by the end of the first century, they had covered two-thirds of the known world. They could not be defeated. Study church history. By the time the third and fourth century, fifth century came along, the devil finally figured out he had to reverse the appetite. Instead of an appetite to go, an appetite to do, an appetite to come, sit, and want. Come, sit, and want. Come, sit, and want. We don't want an appetite to simply, I don't come to church to find out what it can do for me. I'm going to come to church to find out how we can mobilize this thing to affect the world around us. Young people, I mean, these young guys, listen to me. My God, you're not here just to simply sit and breathe good air. You're here to be equipped and go out and affect the world that God puts you in. When that appetite becomes a proper appetite, it's amazing what it does. Now, I want you to think with me. This is not an original, but T.L. Osborne, the famous evangelist that traveled the world and preached face-to-face and saw more miracles, him and Daisy, than any other human being that ever walked the planet, said this. He said, without the world, the church is meaningless. Unless we're going, unless we're reaching, we don't have a meaning anymore. But when we have a meaning, then we reverse the process, and that is that without the church, the world's hopeless. We don't want to be meaningless, and we don't want the world to be hopeless, so we have to go beyond. Are you with me? Are you with me? Are you with me? It's never, a church's success in this world is never based on our seating power. It's based on our sending power. That's why I love when I see videos like this, a church mobilized to reach, to touch. Now, why is it important? I thought about this from many different standpoints. Let me come down here for a moment. I hit John Wiggins yesterday. I promise I wouldn't hit him. My wife got so mad at me. I smacked him hard. But how can you hurt a guy that played rugby for all those years? But now listen. Think of the nation of Israel. I've often thought about this. If you look at geography, you know where Israel is geographically on the map. And I've often thought, why in the world did God pick that geographical location? I mean, there's a lot of other places he could have picked. Now he could have gone to Hawaii, you know, pick something really plush or nice, or up here on the Sunshine Coast. I mean, but why that location? The word geography comes from two words, geography. And it literally means God's handwriting upon the earth. It's a fascinating word, which means that the earth is actually positioned to describe God's handwriting. And so when you look at it from a geographical standpoint, you discover that at the birth of this nation and throughout its history, especially in the Old Testament, there was the two power brokers was Mesopotamia and Egypt. And there was two highways that connected them that went through Israel, which simply meant that God was saying, I didn't put my people on the back roads of humanity. I put my people on the crossroads of humanity. God doesn't create a church that's isolated. He creates a church that's mobile. God doesn't ever put you and I on the back roads. We're not hiding and waiting. We're not an isolated, persecuted minority. And there's so much of that that goes on. The moment you see yourself as some little isolated, persecuted minority, you'll shrink. We got to see ourselves as the force. Jesus never described the church as isolated. He never described the church as this little group of people that huddle up in a back room and just pray for his intimate return. He said the church is salt and the church is light. The church is the church of influence, that wherever it goes, it breeds an influence. It mobilizes itself. God doesn't put us on the back roads. He puts us on the crossroads. So you come, you begin to see this picture. It's an amazing picture. Jesus said, but he needs to go through Samaria. Now, why? 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 Because in Samaria, there was a woman, a Samaritan, half-breed, outcast, five husbands, living with a guy that's not her husband. Who is this woman? Doesn't give her name, just calls her Samaritan woman. Tell you who she is. She's a picture of bankrupt humanity. She's a picture today of everybody around us. She's a picture of us at one time. She's a picture of every neighborhood, every country, every town, every community. There's a bankrupt humanity. And he's saying the church needs to find that. The church needs to find that. That's what this woman becomes. And I love how the story begins to unfold. Because you see this, and you see him making his journey. There's always a mobilized journey. You have to go somewhere to connect with people. Jesus never told people to come to us. He told us to go to them. Cast your bread. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 says, upon the waters, and it will return. Bread is your life. Waters are humanity. Go to humanity. Reach out where people are, the workplace, the neighborhood, family, friends. Let your light so shine in so many different ways, reaching, touching, helping, whatever it takes. My wife is an expert in this. I mean, it just happens to her. I wish it happened to me more, Pastor Andrew. I mean, she walks in a grocery store and people come up to her. I think they always think she works there. That's what I told her. I said, everywhere you go, somebody goes up to you and asks you something. She was in a store one time, this little woman. I mean, she just started a conversation, a little Mexican woman. Her husband was dying of cancer. See, there's there's a Samaritan somewhere. Can I pray for you? Yes, 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 yes. That touch. Where it goes, I don't know. Sometimes you plant, sometimes you water, God gives the increase, but you're there. You're at the crossroads. You cross that person's life. You just happen to be at the seemingly the right place at the right time. You're on a crossroad. And at that moment, there's an opportunity to say something, to reach out, to touch somebody. You never know where it goes. You never know what they're thinking. Mother Teresa used to always say, if you'll treat everybody like they're hurting, you'll treat 95% of the people correctly all the time. Powerful thought. But the thought, this story begins to continue to unfold. And this is what I want you to see. Jesus is traveling, and evidently, it said he was weary in his journey. He wanted food. So the disciples leave. They go to another town to purchase food. Now, let me ask you a question. You don't have to answer it out loud, but what is food? When you're hungry, the body begins to cry out for food because it needs it. Food then is ingested, especially if it's good food, good food. I'm talking about good food right now, good food, not junk food. Food is ingested and it breaks down. It fuels the human anatomy, provides energy, provides strength, provides nutrients. Health is the result of good food. Energy is the result of good food. Vitality is the result of good food. All food is incorporated. All those things are incorporated in food. Without food, you eventually die. But with good food, nutritious food, good things begin to happen. Energy begins to come. Vitality. Your blood becomes healthy. Your mind becomes healthy. And so on and so forth. All that, listen, this is simple. All that is in food. He was depleted of food. They went to purchase food. Are you with me so far? Food was going to provide strength. Food was going to provide vitality. Food was going to provide energy. Food was going to provide health. Food was going to provide what at that moment he was lacking in. That's the humanity side. It's a picture of us. They go out and they purchase physical food. In the midst of all this, they're gone. He then sits on a well. This woman comes, which is a picture of bankrupt humanity. Are you with me? You're with me. She's out there. She's us. She's our, what we need to touch, what we need to reach. He creates a conversation with her. That conversation revolves around the well, revolves around water, something she understood, something he understood. Then he reveals himself. He begins to say, I am the living water. You drink from the water I give, it springs up into eternal life and you'll never thirst again. As he's doing this, the disciples come back with food. They see him talking to this Samaritan woman. They don't like it. They want to say something, but they know enough to keep their mouth shut because they usually put their foot in their mouth. And they don't say it, but they're wondering why he's talking to a Samaritan, especially a woman. Are you with me? Are you with me? Are you with me? An outcast. And it's a woman, which in that culture is even worse. Jesus was the only one that ever liberated women. He was the only one that ever put a woman back on a status that was equal to men. It's no, you know, it's just amazing how we get all confused on words nowadays and politically correct. I will never try to be politically correct. So I want to just say things that aggravate people. They still think that way. When the Bible speaks and it uses the word he throughout the epistles, and it uses a masculine gender talking about humanity, somebody tries to change it to a female gender, and they miss the whole point. Because by creating a masculine gender, he at that time raises a woman to the same status as a man in God's in the cultural economy, he actually is raising her up. Whenever you change the gender, you actually lower yourself. By creating that type of gender, he's saying that she is now on the same plateau culturally as any man. Are you with me? Powerful thought. So we come back to this story. They don't know what to say. They don't say anything. And then they finally say, we've got food. She goes away. She becomes this evangelist. And now the Samaritan woman's gone, and they're in a conversation with Jesus. Hey, Jesus, we got food. He said, I'm not hungry. Wait a minute. Time out. Man, we've been over here buying this stuff. Took us a couple hours. We came all the way back. You said you were hungry. So we went and got something. We brought it back, and now you're not hungry. He said, that's right. I'm not hungry. I have food that you don't know anything about. Now, listen to me. Jesus justified his existence. He revealed himself to her. He showed her. He met a need. He talked to this woman. He explained salvation. He related his heart to her. He connected. Something happened to her, and it brought life into him. Every time the church goes, every time you and I reach another human being, it justifies the existence of why we're here, and it creates an energy. It creates a strength. It creates vitality. It creates health. Whenever a church loses its basic purpose of life, it will always weaken from the inside. But the more it goes, the stronger it becomes. Nothing could stop the church of Jesus Christ. When I was in Vietnam several years ago, I was in Ho Chi Minh City, old Saigon. Then from where we went to a place called Vung Tau. It's the opposite end of Vietnam, on the opposite coast. And we rented a hotel, rented the entire thing, brought in 200 pastors, got the whole thing. And you had to, because everything we were doing was illegal. Everything we were doing, these men and women could go to prison for. And so in the midst of it, we were raided. And by that time, the pastors had gotten used to it, so they had radios, and they would signal each other. That they call them the Caesars, which were the local Gestapo that were going to imprison you. And they said, the Caesars have come. And they went, pew, they scattered like anything. And everything I was teaching, they were burning it back then on these little, those discs. And they were burning them, and they cut the mattress inside their hotel rooms, and they shoved them in there. They said, they can take us, they can imprison us, but they're not going to get this teaching. It was amazing. I mean, I'm over there listening to these people. And the church is thriving. It's gone. The underground church movement started with a friend of mine, a Vietnamese man, in 1980. And by that time, when I was there, it had over 3 million people in it. It just grew exponentially. 60% of all the men that we were ministering, all the pastors were imprisoned. I brought a doctor with me. He said they got jacked up ribs. They got broken jaws. They had been in prison for their faith. But they kept going. They kept reaching. The church was strong. Just like today, we're reaching in the nation of Iran. Iran is on the news all the time. You can't flip it. It's the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world, the nation of Iran. It's the number one enemy of Israel. All that you read is about the Ayatollah and his hatred for Christianity and his hatred for the rest of the world. That's all you read. What you don't read is that the entire nation of Iran, 80 million people, and the nation of Iran has completely rejected Islam. The mosques are completely empty. A friend of mine went out there, spent 2 weeks, went to 14 mosques on Friday, their holy day, saw a total of 2 people. in 14 different mosques. They're completely empty. They're mausoleums. Nobody's going. They said, we're looking for a God of love, mercy, and forgiveness. It has the highest conversion rate per capita of Christianity in the last 10 years than any nation on the planet. It's doubling every 4 years. 80 million people are going to be swept into the kingdom of God. It's amazing. There's over 6 million Christians now. In 4 years, it'll be 12. It's going to hit the exponential curve. The whole nation's going to be swept in. It's going to be decimated. The Ayatollah is going to be kicked out. This whole thing is going to change, and it's going to change the balance of the Middle East, because Israel will no longer have a number one enemy. Are you hearing me? God's always doing it. When persecution is at its highest, the church mobilizes itself more. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. The more you and I go, the stronger we get. Have you ever done a hospital call? Have you ever reached somebody and just shared with them or prayed with somebody publicly outside of the walls of the church? Every time you've done, I promise you, when you check your heart, there's a surge of energy comes into you, a surge of strength comes into you, and that's what Jesus was experiencing and relating to us. Something happens on the inside. Life is a perishable commodity. I've told this story a lot, and I don't know if I've told it here, but it's a good story. It's about this mother who was bringing her son to school, and she was going to go to work. So the car was in the garage. Garage door was open. She started the car. He was late. You know, he's about 8 years old. He's late. So she's honking the horn for her son because she doesn't want to be late to work or him late to school. And he comes running through the garage, jumps in the car. She brings him to school. She goes to work. At the end of the day, she leaves work. She picks him up. She drives home, pushes the button. Garage door opens, and there's water all over the garage, all over the floor. She goes, I wonder where that water's from. And she finally recognized what happened. There's a freezer in the garage, and evidently when her son ran through the garage, he caught the cord, and it pulled it out of the wall. So everything thawed out, and the refrigerator thawed out, and it had water. And so she said, oh, my gosh. She opened it up, and there was $400 worth of meat in that refrigerator. Now, the reason why I know this story is I know the guy that told me this story. It happened to him. He was a pastor. And real nice guy. And so he tells me this story. And I said, so what'd your wife do? She called me up. She said, what are we going to do? Now, let me tell you something. If meat is frozen and thawed out, you can't refreeze it. Thank you. He said, I'm going to come home early. I'm going to fire up the grill. We're going to have a barbecue. Invite the neighborhood, friends, relatives. So he came home early and he fired up the grill and he started cooking. At the end of the evening, everybody was happy but him. Now he's got an empty freezer. He just fed everybody. Now he's got to buy $400 worth of meat and fill it back up again. I didn't even add inflation. This is a 10-year-old story. It might be $600 now. But anyhow, he was laying in bed. He was a pastor. He was laying in bed 10 o'clock at night, and he was thinking, like any good pastor would think, there's got to be a message in this somewhere. And he lay in there. And he said God spoke to him. Want to know what he said? He had just cooked $400 worth of meat. He was discouraged. It was 10 o'clock at night. He's laying in bed. And he's saying, God, there's got to be a message in this somewhere. And God spoke to him. Do you want to know what he said? I'm not going to tell you unless you want to know. I want to make sure you want to know. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to tell the next service. 10 o'clock at night, laying in bed, God, how many believe God still talks? Spoke to him. Want to know what he said? Yes. I think we're getting closer, Tim. Do you want to know what he said?
Yes.
You see, I found out a long time ago that preaching is like eating. No woman wants to cook for people that don't want to eat. But as the food is permeating the atmosphere, being breathed in through the man's nostrils, causing his saliva glands to explode, he looks at her and says, "Is it ready?" And she says, "Almost." Another 10 minutes goes by. His stomach is crying for food. His saliva glands are all over the place. And he says, "Is it ready?" And she says, "Almost." And when the food finally comes, he devours it. And he looks at her and he says, "That was incredible." Because he was hungry. Because if you're hungry, everything tastes good. 10 o'clock at night, laying in bed, $400 of meat served. Now he's got to refill it. He said, "God, there's got to be a message in this somewhere." And God spoke to him. Do you want to know what he said? It's coming now. It's coming now. True story. Life. This is it. This is it. This is it. This is it. Worthy of a tweet. Worthy of a tweet. Life is perishable. If you don't give it away, the day will come where you have to throw it away. You can't save it. There's no deep freeze. Our life is so designed by God that it is meant to give away every day in some capacity. I got a good friend of mine. His name is Wayne Myers. I went to see him in Mexico. He lives in Mexico City. Went to see him. I was down there preaching, Mexico City. Went to see him back in July. I wanted to see him because Wayne just turned 97. The last day of August, he turned 97. He got saved, born again on the USS Enterprise, the aircraft carrier, in World War II fighting the Japanese. When a 500-pound armor, 250 kilo for Aussies, armor-piercing bomb hit the wooden flight deck, Tony, of the USS Enterprise and bounced. Figure that one out. Armor piercing. Hit the Pacific and blew up. Wayne got saved. God dictated to him the call of God. He wrote it on 3x5 index cards. He got out of the military. God told him to go to Mexico. He's from Mississippi. Couldn't speak a word of Spanish. People from Mississippi can't speak English. Absolutely true. Went down there over 70 years ago when Mexico had 2%. 2% of Mexico was evangelical Christian. It was ruled by Catholicism. You couldn't get anywhere. You would be in prison for preaching the gospel. And he started a movement called Amistad Cristiana that has thousands of churches in it today that shifted Mexico from 2% to 20%. All came back to Wayne Myers. He's 97 years old. He preaches four times a week. I asked him not too long ago, I called him up. I keep tabs on him. He didn't hear too good. So I yell over the phone. I call him Brother Wayne. Brother Wayne! Yes! They told me, this is the truth. He said, "I can't die. I can't die." I said, "Why can't you die?" He said, "I've got too much to do. I've got to build 300 churches this year." He's built over 6,000 churches. I physically put the money to build the buildings. I got to do 300 this year. I can't die. When a man or a woman contains the purposes of God, death can't kill them. The grave can't swallow them. The devil can't have them. And sickness can't destroy them because there's something percolating on the inside of you, a force, a power, and an energy. Are you listening to me? Okay, I got one more story. Back in the South, I have time to finish. In the 1600s, there was a guy by the name of Oliver Cromwell. He was the great political and military leader of Great Britain. And they ran into a problem. They had no currency. No silver, I should say. No silver. And so they went and without silver, they would have no currency. Without currency, currency comes from the word current. Move, it moves. Without currency, you have no economy. So the nation was at a standstill. His men came to him and said, "Mr. Cromwell, we have no silver. We need silver to create currency. We need currency to create an economy." He said, "Find the silver, find it." They went all over Great Britain. They still couldn't find it. He kept telling, "Find it." So finally, they came to him. and they said, Mr. Cromwell, we found silver. We found it. We found silver. He said, where did you find it? Where did you find it? They said, we found it. We found it. I love this. I love you with me. We found it. He said, where? He said, we found it in the cathedrals, in the statues of the saints. They're made out of pure silver. And Cromwell looked at him. And this is what he said. I'm going to tell you. I love it. He said this, and I quote, melt down the saints and put them into circulation. And I think the same thing is true today. I don't want to be a statue inside of God's house. I want to be somebody when I come in here, the fire of God melts me down and creates a currency from my life. Because through God, you are the currency of God that creates the economy of God that will change humanity. Stand up with me. Stand up, stand up, stand up, stand up. We're not here to be a statue. Statues don't do anything. Statues are stiff. Statues don't talk. Statues don't speak. Statues don't hear. Statues don't see. My God, when I come in here, I want my eyes open. I want my ears open. I want my hands extended. I want my feet to begin to move, because every time you and I don't care if it's a smile. I don't care if it's a handshake. I don't care if it's a God bless you. I don't care if it's lifting a shovel to help somebody. I don't care if it's groceries to help somebody. Every time the church extends itself, it gets stronger and stronger and brings light and energy and salt to a community.
We hope you enjoyed the message. If you'd like to respond to this message in any way or would like to talk to one of our pastors, please email us at inquiries@c3bd.com. Or for any more information about our church and the events we have coming up, please go to c3bd.com. Have a great week.